Welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iFormRx, and today we're going to be talking about asthma and ways to reduce the frequency of exacerbations in patients who have persistent uncontrolled asthma despite using guideline-recommended treatments. Joining me today are Michael Nagy and Ashley Crowell. Dr. Nagy is a PGY2 ambulatory care pharmacy practice resident at the William S. Middleton Memorial VA Medical Center in Madison, Wisconsin. And Dr. Crowell is a faculty member at the University of Kansas and practices at the Via Christi Family Medicine Clinic in Wichita. Well, Michael, Ashley, welcome to the iFormRx podcast.
Thank you, Stuart. We're happy to be here today.
Yes, excited to be here. Thank you for having us.
So before we get started, I want you to imagine you're seeing JB, a 26-year-old female with chronic persistent asthma in clinic today. And she was referred to you by her primary care physician because she had three asthma exacerbations over the last 6 months, which have resulted in visits to the emergency department and two courses of systemic steroids. Her primary care physician wants you to evaluate her ability to use her inhalers properly and to determine whether there are any adherence issues. For asthma maintenance therapy, she's currently using two inhalations twice daily of a high-dose combination product containing budesonide and formoterol. In addition, she uses a albuterol inhaler, which she uses for rescue therapy a few times a week. She states that she has several asthma triggers, but whenever she gets a cold, it gets really bad, and she typically needs systemic steroid therapy during these episodes. She demonstrates her inhaler technique for you, which she is able to perform flawlessly, and looking at her refill history, you note that she has received her maintenance inhaler at regular and appropriate intervals. She maintains an asthma diary and records not only her peak flow measurements, but also the administration of her maintenance and rescue inhalers. JB admits to missing doses of her maintenance therapy, quote, every now and then, and points to two occasions over the past 3 months in her diary where she missed a dose. Overall, you believe her adherence with her current therapy is pretty darn close to optimal. So Michael and Ashley, before we get into the specifics of the study you examined in your commentary, can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that are going on in your mind about this case? What additional information might you want to collect and assess? And what are some of the additional treatment options you'd consider at this point?
An interesting case. JB performs many tasks well, including her inhaler technique, adherence, and keeping an asthma diary. That as pharmacists, we often find room for improvement with our asthma patients. A few additional pieces of information to obtain from JB are, what are her additional triggers? What are her allergies? And has she actually had an allergy test? Her smoking status and exposure to secondhand smoke? Also, are there any pets in the home? If so, do they sleep in her bed? What her previous treatments she's tried for asthma? Also, we'd want to know what she does in her daily life to determine environmental exposure. And lastly, we'd like to know what occurs to make her use her albuterol inhaler.
Some additional treatment options we might consider for JB is, one, we could increase or schedule her albuterol inhaler when she's having an exacerbation in an effort to prevent additional ER visits. We'd also want to provide her with a detailed asthma action plan. We may consider adding a long-acting muscarinic antagonist like tiotropium, which has shown benefit in the asthma population. If allergies are a concern, we could add an inhaled nasal steroid or leukotriene receptor antagonist. And then lastly, we could also consider just adding an additional inhaled corticosteroid such as Flovent to increase the steroid component, especially during those peak times when she notably experiences colds.
So in the commentary you wrote for iFormRx entitled Azithromycin for Asthma Exacerbation, What Amazes Us and What Doesn't, you talk about the potential role of antibiotics in patients with chronic persistent asthma. So briefly tell us about some of the early evidence using macrolide antibiotics to reduce asthma symptoms.
In a 2015 Cochrane database systematic review looking at macrolide use in patients with chronic asthma, results did not find macrolides to be better than placebo for the majority of clinical outcomes studied, including exacerbations requiring hospitalization. However, the quality of the 23 studies reported was low, with high variability in inclusion criteria, interventions, and outcomes. And so that's why additional prospective research is needed.
So Ashley, obviously we need more data before we should consider routinely using macrolide antibiotics to improve asthma symptoms. The results of the AMAZES study were published earlier this year in Lancet, and a link to that study is included with your written commentary. AMAZES actually addresses this concern for additional data. But for those in our audience who haven't read the paper, can you give us a brief summary of the study design and its major findings?
The AMAZES study aimed to determine the efficacy and safety of oral azithromycin 500 milligrams three times a week as add-on therapy for patients 18 years of age or older. It was a 48-week, multi-site, randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial conducted in Australia. There were a total of 420 patients enrolled in the study, and the primary efficacy outcome was total number of asthma exacerbations as well as asthma quality of life. This study showed that azithromycin led to statistically significant reductions in the mean number of asthma exacerbations compared to placebo, and the total number of patients who experienced an exacerbation was significantly lower in the azithromycin group, 94 compared to 127 in the placebo group. There was no difference in serious adverse events between the study groups, but azithromycin was associated with significant rates of diarrhea when compared to placebo.
So, Michael, tell us a little bit about what you believe to be the key strengths and limitations of the AMAZES study. Are there any major sources of bias, confounders, or other threats to the internal validity of this study?
Well, the key strengths of this trial include the prospective randomized controlled design with the use of the clinical outcome of exacerbations as the primary measure, supplemented by patient-perceived quality of life. Additional strengths were the size, length, and non-biased funding source of the study. The AMAZES trial is the largest and longest study exploring macrolide use in the prevention of asthma exacerbations. There are several limitations to this study. First, results cannot be generalized to children and young adults less than 50 years of age or current tobacco users, as the trial did not enroll this population. The average age of trial participants was about 60 years old, which is older than most trials in adult asthma, where the typical age is around 40 years. Secondarily, a subset of patients in the study may be considered to have asthma COPD overlap syndrome. Four points to support this include the older patient population, the inclusion of former smokers, the average pre-bronchodilator FEV1 over FVC ratio, which was 68%. And as we know, a post-bronchodilator FEV1 over FVC ratio of less than 70 is considered diagnostic for COPD. Last, about 20% of patients were on long-acting muscarinic antagonists prior to the common use for asthma. This could imply that the primary care providers may have suspected a COPD component to their breathing disorder. The possibility of a subset of asthma COPD overlap syndrome participants may skew or alter the results in favor of the intervention, as macrolide therapy is known to prevent COPD exacerbations, is frequently used in that population. A third limitation: the study was not powered to determine changes in antimicrobial resistance, and the total number of sputum samples was small. Thus, the impact of chronic azithromycin treatment on bacterial resistance requires further investigation. Lastly, the duration of treatment, 48 weeks, was not discussed or supported, which leaves questions on proper duration and long-term management with macrolide therapy. Should this be chronic treatment or one 48-week course? Can you do multiple courses? And these questions remain unanswered.
So Ashley, Michael, how does the AMAZES study change practice? Do you think these findings will or should change asthma guidelines? And would you recommend using azithromycin in a case like JB?
While we saw in the study that azithromycin was associated with a decrease in the frequency of asthma exacerbations with limited adverse effects to the patient, we still don't know the long-term impact of chronic azithromycin therapy on antimicrobial resistance. I believe that further studies are needed to confirm these results while also providing additional information on the risk of antimicrobial resistance before I would feel comfortable recommending this treatment option to all of my asthma patients.
We feel this trial does not sufficiently provide enough evidence to change asthma guidelines. However, it is possible it may be added to guidelines as a weak recommendation. Macrolide add-on therapy should come after long-acting muscarinic antagonist step-up therapy. Although antibiotics are used for the prevention of exacerbations in COPD, it's important to keep in mind that COPD exacerbations directly correlate to mortality and progressive worsening of future lung function. That same thing cannot be said about asthma exacerbations, so the risk-benefit discussion is different. In JB's case, given her younger age, she does not fit well into the patient population studied in the MAZES trial. Given the uncertainty of duration of therapy, the risk for microbial resistance, we would not recommend azithromycin in a case like JB. Instead, initially we would explore and recommend avoiding triggers, increasing as-needed use of short-acting beta agonists during an exacerbation, and the addition of a long-acting muscarinic antagonist to her maintenance regimen.
So Michael, Ashley, I want to thank you both for joining us today to discuss the use of azithromycin to prevent asthma exacerbations in patients who are already taking maximal doses of guideline-recommended treatments. And I think it's clear from your comments that you believe that macrolide antibiotics and azithromycin in particular are probably not ready for prime time. There's just too many questions that remain unanswered. But tell us what you think. Only iFormRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free. Sign up today. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.